Hello, everybody, and welcome to Mind Clickers. I'm a sport and exercise scientist from Melbourne, Australia, with a passion for esports performance, coaching, and overall mental well-being. I've been in esports for quite my life, previously competing in COD 4 Pro Mod and coaching StarCraft 2, whilst avidly loving CSGO and all FPSs. I created Mind Clickers to provide an insight into the psychological and performance demands of elite-level gaming. This includes getting an insight from coaches, players, staff, org founders, and esports researchers about their respective domains. In the following episode, I chat with Dr. Ryan Terrell, also known as the Psych Sensei, who is a licensed clinical psychologist and works within the esports industry as an esports psychologist, mental performance coach, and esports program developer. Within the esports industry, Dr. Terrell has experience of working in titles such as League of Legends, Rainbow Six Siege, and Valorant. Dr. Terrell is very passionate about esports and believes that esports can be used as a tool to develop well-rounded gamers and fans alike. The following episode is jam-packed with information, which is appropriate for almost all of our listeners, whether you be a casual or competitive player, a coach, an esports organization owner, a shoutcaster, or even an older adult listening in to understand the next generation. Ryan and I chat about creating a dynasty, building leadership, especially within a very heavy team-focused culture, roster rotations, player development programs, team culture, emotional regulation, state-dependent learning, being a support player, tapering esports and cognitive fatigue so that esports players can become acclimated to situations, self-confidence and self-efficacy, mental toughness, arousal, the mindset of a troll, setting SMART goals, and also taking reflections. Thank you very much, and I hope you enjoy. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Season 2, Episode 9 of Mind Clickers, where it's time to click both heads in 2021. I'm joined here today by Dr. Ryan Terrell, who is also known as the Psych Sensei. He is a licensed clinical psychologist and works in the esports industry as an esports psychologist, mental performance coach, and esports program developer. How are you going today, mate?
What's good? What's good? Like, I'm happy to be here. Thanks for having me, dude.
Pleasure to have you on, mate. How you been? How's everything over there in the US?
It's going, man. It's going. I'm doing my best to stay inside. I think that's where it's the safest. But if you don't go outside, I mean, if you do all go outside, then it's questionable. I just say where it's safe.
So whereabouts are you located in the US? Was it Arizona?
Yeah, so I'm located right next to Arizona State University, so located in Tempe, Arizona.
Wow, awesome, definitely. I remember I had Shinobi on, and he was from, I think, Cali. So it's definitely awesome to have a couple of people on from different areas of the US and try and get an understanding of what their mindset is towards different things.
For sure, yeah. Worked and studied in Cali, and then originally from Hawaii, and then moved out to Arizona for my wife's work. So that's where we are now. So yeah, I've been around a little bit from west coast of the US.
Yeah. Awesome. Yeah. Is it a little bit hotter in Arizona, or is it
cold? A little bit. It's, you know, in the summer, it averages around, you know, hundreds or so. But right now it's in the cooler. So we're hitting like 60s, and it's prime time for another month or so. And then it gets hot again.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Too hot for me. I'd rather have the rain, to be honest.
Amen, brother. Amen. It's not. I'm doing my time here in Arizona, and after that, hopefully, I can live a good life. Just joking. It's always good, man.
So I guess we'll start off with a bit of an introduction about yourself, your previous experience within clinical work, and then some of the esports work you've done as well.
Awesome. Yeah. So by licensure, I'm a clinical psychologist. I graduated back in 2017, and my journey into esports really began in 2018 when I was working at the University of Southern California when they launched their inaugural esports program, their varsity program. Basically, I was working with a student, and we're going through like, oh, what are you interested in? He said like, oh, I'm part of this esports thing. And I'm like, I have to do that. Where are we going? And he said, oh, let's come to a meeting. And that's where everything kind of happened. I think in my clinical training, I've really enjoyed working with adolescents to college students. Like that was like my jam age group, all the way up to like regular adults, I would say. And then from there, I really enjoyed games. I think games had always been a part of me. I've been like a traditional sport athlete, loved board games, loved everything about gaming, game theory, all of it. And then I found games was a really nice way to talk with adolescents or kids or even like people in college, because it's a different conversation and you think about things a little bit differently when you think about a game. So it lowers your defenses, you think metaphorically, and it's a lot of fun because it's not exactly talking about whatever, but you're talking about the game. And then when I got to USC to work with the players there, it was my job to basically help them become better students, better people, balance everything so they could focus on their games. And then after working with them, it's definitely doing the one-on-one individual work to see what individual players are challenged with, and at the same time working as an entire team to work on communication, synergy, personality management, all the communication things. So that's how it all kind of started, and using my clinical lens to intervene at different levels, meeting each player where they're at to help them get to where they want to go. And also I worked with coaches too, to see how they communicate, how they came up with their strategies, how they can better relate to their players and actually get them to play the way that they see the game. So if you think about it, the best way to play a team sport like League of Legends or any esport that involves more than one person, you have to develop this kind of hive mind and speak without speaking almost. And that's how you really can play at the highest of levels. But how do you do that? So as a coach, you really need to let the players think like you, or you need to understand how your players think so you can guide them to the correct strategy or a strategy that everyone can play towards. So working with coaches, working with players, working with teams, and so many different levels, super fun, super fun.
Dang, it sounds like you're really in depth there, and you really kind of got everything under control.
Controlled chaos, for sure. Controlled chaos.
When you started Psych, did you already have that preconceived notion that I want to go into esports?
No. If someone told me when I started my program that, dude, you're going to be working in esports and esports psychologists, I've been like, dude, you're kidding. No way, dude. When I originally went in, I just knew that I wanted to help people. And I really enjoyed talking with people and listening to people and helping them guide themselves out of their own problems. And that started, luckily my mom was a counselor. And so that's, I guess, kind of how it started. She wanted to talk about feelings and all these kinds of things. And then I really found my passion for psychology, I'd say sophomore year of high school, through a sports psychology class, come to think of it. And then after that, I took all the psychology courses. Something that really sparked my joy of talking with people and actually listening was this course called ICP, Introduction to Counseling Principles, where basically it taught you how to talk with your friends when they're having a bad day or how to process feelings. It was pretty dope. And so from there, that was like, okay, I want to do this for a long time. And so then I went to undergrad at Pacific University, graduated with a BS in psych and emphasis in neuroscience. And then from there, I went to my graduate program to be a therapist or a clinician for my PsyD. And I just thought I was going to have a small little private practice back in Hawaii and be chilling. But then life takes a hold and then you're in esports and now you're working with my target population just in a different way. But it's just so funny how everything kind of relates back to everything, back to life. So it's really interesting how games have a parallel between life and how you can actually use games to improve players' lives through a different angle. So I love it. Everything about esports is so fun.
Definitely. I love the passion. I can kind of relate to that as well, because throughout my bachelor's, I had a sports psych class as well. And just getting in there and understanding all the different notions. And then kind of at that time, I was pretty competitive in regards to esports in Call of Duty. So then being able to take different aspects, visualization, kind of arousal levels, self-efficacy, starting to really intertwine them within my gameplay. And then I started to realize, hey, maybe I can take these techniques. And that's kind of how MindClicker started, being able to kind of broadcast, have people like yourself on.
Yeah.
Really go through different things and, expose it to players and competitive players, casual players as well.
For sure, for sure. I think that this is a very important conversation to be having, because I think when people think psychology, they either think poppy psychology or these small little things. But really, when you get down to it, it's really looking at how you can use these different techniques to be your best person. Because, performance aside, if you're not good, if you don't have self-regulation, if you don't have, Maslow's hierarchy of needs already set up, you don't have the structures, you don't have whatever, discipline, all these things, they're not going to really matter if you don't have the foundations. So going back to really think about one, how to be your best person. And then once you're able to do that, dude, the performance thing is easy, because you can give you all the performance techniques. I can give you all the visualization. I give you all the breathing. But if you don't have food, shelter, any of that stuff, it's not going to happen. You're not sleeping, you're not eating, exercising, it's not going to fall apart. So really, when I thought about how to work with players, my goal is okay, if I was going to break it down to the fundamental pieces of how to be, how to think, how to just do things efficiently. How would I do that? And then after that, all the performance stuff comes easily.
Yeah, fantastic. Absolutely love it. So you talked briefly about some experience in esports. Was that working with a team? Was that working with individual players? And how did you get integrated into that scene?
Good question. Luck, most of it. I'd say. But I've worked in the amateur scene and the collegiate scene presently. I've worked with individual players. I've worked with individual coaches. I've worked on the organizational level. I've worked with individual teams. So I've worked across the whole gambit. I've seen a lot of different things. I had a lot of unique experiences. So pretty much a lot of, I wouldn't say everything, but a lot of different levels for sure.
Yeah, for sure. And what was your most like, what was the one where you felt like I can really help promote change with these people? Was it more so the collegiate level or more so that organizational level where you felt like if I have a chat with some of these guys, that can really have that waterfall down effect and really, you know, promote a lot of more areas?
That's a really good question. I would say that each level of intervention has different levels of effectiveness and impact. I think some of the things that would really help me, so for example, if I'm working on organizational level, creating buy-in with the players, or more importantly than the players, is the organizational like structure itself. So leaders of an organization, if I can get coaches buy-in, that's even more important, because if I just show up and be like, okay, this is Psych Sensei, this is Dr. Ryan, he's going to teach us some stuff. And he's like, okay, we'll just go. And then they don't really buy into the process. And the players are like, well, then what are we doing here also? So if I'm working on the organization level, I need organizational buy-in. If it's like, if I'm working with a private client, usually they have come approach me and they're motivated to work. But if I work within a team, then hopefully the coach got my back or really will rely on me to, or I have to just make my presence very known that I'm here. I have something to offer. I'm here investing my time into you. So whatever you guys want to get out of this experience, I'm here to help you get better. But these are just things I see. What do you guys think about them? Because I think as a psychologist, something that I've learned is that I can't really force anybody to change. And in fact, when I want to work harder than my players, I'm doing it wrong, because I know that it's really important that I am invested into the process. But at the same time, I need to work just as hard as my player, because if I work harder than them, then it's not their process. But if they're going to match my level of effort, then we're both co-creating something that they want to do and go in the direction and grow in the direction that they want to grow in, versus just me just trying to push them. And so I think that's something that is really important for me to realize as a coach too, is like, okay, I'm here to present a path for you about where I see you doing your best or getting the best out of this experience. Here it is. And this is why I think these things, what do you guys think? And then from there, they can say, I want to do things. I don't want to do these things. And we have this nice little discussion. And then from there, we can create a better plan with more motivation from the player side that they'll actually follow through and grow in the ways that they want to.
Yeah, fantastic. I love that kind of approach. Definitely having that approach where you're kind of on an even playing field with the players, I think works efficiently and effectively. In previous experience, I've seen coaches who are a little bit more direct. They kind of enforce, you know, you got to have proper hydration. Why aren't you doing this? And a lot more overcoming in the way that they kind of deal and help manage change with their players. That's not to say that their way isn't wrong. It's just to say that, you know, in personal opinion, I definitely agree with what you're saying in regards to being on that equal playing field and helping to, you know, convince and help to promote change within players effectively and naturally almost. Buy-in's definitely a big one. I definitely agree. How can we start to promote buy-in, especially for those organizations, those coaches who aren't really interested in helping with the performance of their players?
That's a really good question. And I want to give the benefit of doubt to the organizations and coaches, because I want to say, I want to hope that they really care about their players and they really care about the performance of the players. I don't want to think that, I would really hate to think that organizations or coaches or teams just really only care about the performance piece and they only really care about the mental health piece, because if they go boom, they don't have a player. I really hope that's not the motivation for them to be caring. But I think when you're thinking about in like teams and organizations, I think what they really care about though is the bottom line. And so I'll say, if that's the thing that they really care about, then my question and maybe my angle would be like, well, if you want to be on top, like how long do you want to be on top for? Or how do you want to get there? Because you can just push your players and you can have one good season and that's it. But how much revenue are you going to get off of one good season? Instead, what the fans really want to see is a dynasty. They want to see a story. They really want to see ups and downs and how you actually take care of your players and how you want to pass it on to the next generation. I think something that's really missing within the whole esports ecosystem in general is a general grooming of players. So like when you see like in America, you have like Little League Baseball or AYSO Soccer or PB Football, where you actually have like older adults have the system to groom kids to really help them understand the whole process and create that kind of culture by shaping and like, I don't know, modeling of behaviors. So that would be really cool if like, I don't know, a professional team could really put on leagues for kids and really promote from a young age. Like this is how game culture is supposed to be. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's not only about like really training hard, but this is about recovery and sleep and budgeting your time and having blocks to scrim and really train versus like grinding all night. I think it's really hard because at the same time, whose responsibility is that? Is that like Riot's responsibility for League of Legends to really set that whole program up? Or is it professional leagues to set that thing up? I'm not quite sure. But at the same time, I think it's really maybe, I think it's what's challenging about your question is like, well, how do you create buy-in from someone who's got here doing it a certain way in their own bedroom by themselves? Mm-hmm. And I think, and you even look at the ages of esport athletes, they're like, what, 17, the youngest to be into League of Legends, I think. So if you're 17 already and you don't really have a fully developed frontal lobe, like you're taking all this information in already and you're like, okay, yeah, so what? But really like always, I think maybe like presenting information and then always catering it to the end of, and this is how it's going to affect your performance. And this is why I'm telling you to do it. And if you mess up or you don't, you're feeling tired or you're feeling that you can't have clear thoughts, well, let's check. Let's always go back to, you know, the fundamentals. Did you sleep today? Did you rest? Did you eat? Did you exercise? Okay, check, check, check. Okay, now did you practice? Like there should be like a, maybe a checklist of things and always going back down to reinforce those fundamental skills first before you work on the actual like training pieces, because that should be a part of it. So maybe that's how you can do it, but that's a very interesting question. And I think we can solve that when we can make a plenty of money, man.
Yeah, it's definitely an interesting question, especially in regards to kind of who's going to be there doing it. Is there going to be more of a regulating governing body that's going to be enforcing into all the different games? Because obviously each game has kind of a different effect. Each game has a different requirement. Especially in regards to teams, whether it be a team-based game like League of Legends, CSGO, whether it be more of an individualized game such as StarCraft or Hearthstone. Each game has different fundamentals. And then it's kind of like, how do we kind of address each of those fundamentals in order to really address the players? So it's definitely one of those things. And yeah, as you said before, it's interesting in terms of that youth entry. You know, we even have, you know, 14-year-old Fortnite players earning six figures. And that barrier for entry is just lower and lower. And as it gets lower and lower, it's going to be more, you know, placing a cognitive stress on some of these players, especially if they're managing on the side education, if they're managing something else. It's going to be a big balancing act for some of these guys, especially going into a big culture that's not really structured and laid out.
Mm-hmm. Yes, to speak on your point, I think another the challenging thing with each job, like I think the topic you're hitting on is gaming culture. Mm-hmm. And then with each title or each genre of games, there's a subculture. And I think it'd be really challenging to go in and try to change the whole entire culture. So maybe it's promoting like champions on Twitch. Maybe, like I said, it's providing leads for kids. Maybe it's parent education about how to co-regulate your kid and actually use games as a way to connect with them instead of something that like Timmy just goes in his room and comes out like 4 hours later, 8 hours later, all angry. I don't know. We only hear him when he slams things around. I don't know. How awesome would it be if you had a parent actually invested in your kid? Like they go and watch baseball practice or basketball practice.
Exactly. Yeah.
Kind of thing. So I think gaming culture in general, I think, is becoming more in the spotlight now because esports and COVID has forced people inside. And so now you have more time to live online or participate in games. So I think it's becoming a little bit more apparent how gaming culture is kind of jacked up. So then the question then is, well, what do you want to do to change it? It yourself? I think maybe that's the biggest part is like, well, maybe I can't change the entire ecosystem because maybe I'm too small or whatever. But so what is going to help you perform your best? You know, and then if you're staying up really late, drinking a lot of energy drinks, then why? Oh, I want to increase my performance. Okay, well, did you know that there's a lot of different ways to increase your performance? Well, how come you're staying up so late? Oh, because like that's the only time that good competition is there. Okay, then how about you shift your sleep schedule back? And they look at me like, what? Like, yeah, okay. If you want to train really from like 12 to 4, you say that's when the good people are training. Okay, then let's make sure that's the prime time you're training. Then where can you sleep? I guess I could sleep here. Okay, then what do you got? Oh, but I got to school. Okay, so you got school. Where do you want to put school in? Okay, school's here. Okay, is this enough time for you to train and then wake up for school and then like do all your stuff? Oh, maybe not. Okay, then well, how do you want to schedule this out so you can fit everything in? So if this is your prime time to be training, this is where I want you to focus, right? And they look at me like, what? This is okay, I can do this. Like, well, if that's the way that you want to schedule yourself, then sure, we can do that. Why not? So it's really thinking about what things are really important to you, setting those priorities, and then going for it. I think the challenging thing with esports is, because I was having this conversation with my mentor, and he was saying, like, Ryan, if you really want to get into this, dude, you should go into traditional sports, you should go to basketball. So why? And he's like, well, do you know any other seven foot people that can shoot a three? I'm like, that's true. He's like, dude, everyone plays sports. Right. Everybody wants to play esports. It's so easy to just play video games and go on Twitch and just like spend time doing this thing. But at the same time, like there's always going to be someone younger, cheaper, that's going to do it better. So if that's the case, then why? Like if that's a case of like younger people getting into the scene earlier, then what are the things that you need to do to really make this a priority? I think that kind of like when I think about that, it's kind of I heard another quote, like everyone wants to be a bodybuilder, but no one wants to lift a damn weight. Like if you really want to get into esports and you are going to get really good, I'm sorry, you got to sacrifice some things and you have to be disciplined and set yourself up. And if you don't do these things, then if your goal is to get to go pro, the question should be, how long do you want to be pro for? Not just getting there, because that's just a milestone that you achieve. And it's not like once you achieve that milestone, you're done. But once if you get to that level, don't you want to stay there? So then how can we find the things that's going to help you not only get there, but maintain your status as being a pro? And these are the small little daily things that I guess professional gamers do that most amateur players don't, or maybe aspiring amateur players don't do often, is really thinking about that routine to prioritize their performance and what they need to do. It's like having a job without getting paid first. So I think that's the challenge, where it's not all like to get there, it's not all fun and games, literally. So you have to put in the work to do things a little bit differently so you can get there. But then your gaming culture might get in the way of real culture. Like, oh, what are you doing, man? You're just playing video games all day. Like, why are you doing that? And you think like, oh my gosh, my parents don't understand. Like, I'm not going anywhere. I'm not using my education. So there's a lot of things that esports players have to deal with mentally, for sure, when they're even getting into the seriousness of training. So sorry, I know that's not where you went, but I kind of like
that was good. Yeah, I agree with it. I definitely agree with it. It's definitely one of those things, especially in my kind of thought process. I had a talk about the other day, and especially in regards to having that schedule, it's important, especially if you want to commit to it, because the way we talked about it is going into esports, it's a big investment. It's a big investment into yourself mentally, and it's a big investment into you physically. And whether you're ticking those boxes is a matter of how well you're going to perform in the end goal. And you know, I think everyone's end goal is different. Whether they want to, you know, get hired onto a tier one team, a tier two team, the duration of that roster length, whether they want to play for a little bit, get that kind of known, they get a credibility, and then going back onto Twitch or YouTube. It's one of those things where everyone has that kind of different individualized goal. And then being able to micromanage everyone's goal is one of those difficult tasks. So it kind of brings me down to my next kind of question in regards to roster rotation. You see it so often, you see it so frequently, whether it be, you know, in traditional sports, some people are rostered on for six months to a year, 2 years, you get 4-year contracts here and there. But in esports, you know, people get rostered out every 2-3 months. It's one of those things where, you know, longevity isn't there, especially for these guys that are committing days and days and days and days by neglecting other things as well. So how can we try and, you know, indirectly change this kind of rotation mindset to the culture?
Yeah, that's a really good question. And I'm going to speak upon it from my perspective, and it may not be as accurate because I haven't been at the pro level. And that's kind of what I like about amateur and collegiate, is that most oftentimes when you have a roster lock, it's like that's your roster. And of course, amateur teams often go boom after like a big tournament or what have you. But collegiate seasons are like, you're here for 4 years. Or so we hope. it's most beneficial for the university if you're here for 4 years, you know? So I think what's challenging about maybe the pro scene and rosters is that when you think about how they even pick up players, it's not entire teams. they pick up individual players, maybe from the ladder, maybe from scouting grounds, maybe from proving grounds, what have you. So even when you think about team development, cohesion, and this and that, like, I'm not quite sure what they're looking for. I know it's W's, but I don't know if it's like, we want to keep this team together as long as possible and work on them and develop them as a team. I'm not quite sure of the angle, but I'm not quite sure if it's more of the, well, this person is the number one jungler on the ladder, so they should know how to play the position, put them in. I'm not quite sure if that's how it is. And I mean, we've seen that fail time and time again in traditional sports also, where these are high powered, really good athletes that should be on the all-star team, but they cannot play together. How come? Mm-hmm. It's like, well, they don't know how to do teamwork. They don't know how to communicate. They all have different needs that we're not addressing. So again, I cannot really speak to how they try to do team cohesion and this and that, but even looking at the ecosystem of how players are picked up, maybe what is emphasized, I can't really tell you what the player development programs are or what those look like. But maybe that's maybe the cause, is that there's not really a focus on team. And maybe I'm thinking even in like a really interesting thing would be looking at like Asian like teams and seeing how long those teams stay together or franchises stay together versus like the US. Cause I even know like just looking at or North America or Western, cause even looking at the cultural differences about emphasizing the individual over the team, I would say that's much more of a Eastern Asian collectivistic perspective versus like a Western perspective where the individual is greater than the team. And I think sometimes that's what gets kind of hard. I'm thinking about like NBA basketball, you know, where there's a clear star and people want to be the star of the team and such and have hard times playing with the team. And I'm trying to extrapolate that to apply that to like NA, maybe even League of Legends, and how that's different than like Asian teams and how they play the game. Like the, you know, Korean, very team-based. I'm thinking like China's very fight-based, but with the team. So versus like US, and then again, reflecting on how we do in worlds, but we won't talk about that. So, I mean, maybe there's even a big cultural difference too when looking at development of people and teams and players.
Yeah, for sure. And you know that we see it everywhere in regards to mostly all esports, that the Koreans are so dominant within regards to their, you know, their reigning wins and dubs. Is it something that NA and NU can start to, I guess, take, you know, bits and pieces from these Korean teams and kind of break down what they're doing so we can start to understand, hey, these guys are, you know, these guys are working this way. We can start to adopt what they're doing into our schedule. We can start to break down how they do technical analysis of their post games. We can put in the same amount of hours. But I think then again, when you talk about hours, you talk about grinding and that kind of longevity in terms of playing. I think the Koreans are another level. They do have a lot to focus. They do a lot to commit. And there's a big difference there maybe.
Dude, I was just, as you're speaking, I was just thinking about like, oh damn, what kind of changes we need to make? I think that my first response would be like, well, I think it's really challenging to try to teach someone how to be less individualistic on the fly when you get them when they're 17 versus in Korean culture, Asian culture, you are groomed from pre-birth that don't mean anything. And it's about the unit of the family, or it's about the unit of the team that's more important than you. You play a role. What's your role? Know your role, be good at your role, and do it. Versus how many role players do you know are in the US? Not that many people, I would say. I would think it takes a very special person to know their role, get really good at it, and know when to be like in the spotlight and know when to step back. I think people are challenged playing roles in most times. So I think that's one barrier to pick up. I think another barrier too is like the discipline, dude. The discipline that you need to have to really like understand what you're doing and why you're doing and have the intentionality for it and what it means. I think that's another barrier and challenge where I think, again, sometimes you have motivational challenges of like, okay, do this because I think you should, this will really help you. I don't know, maybe not. And then, you know, versus if a Korean coach tells you do this, you say, okay, I did it already. Like that's just a thing. So the system is different, I would say. So it's really hard to say if we copied and paste Korean stuff to America, would we get better? I think you got to make the system fit the culture. And then I think really, since maybe US is different, is really creating a culture of like buy-in and like, this is how it's going to benefit you and benefit us as a team. And if you want to do it this way, then we can do it together. I think about there's this awesome series. I only watched the first episode on Netflix about like coaches. And the first one was like Doc Rivers and the way that Doc Rivers was able to like create a team and what he really tried to establish. But that was all through Doc Rivers setting an example and having strong leaders that know how to do it and not knowing how maybe it's a coach knowing how to bring a team together through a US lens or a Western lens to really fit that team, or having a coach that is able to create that system or relationship between players so they all understand their each individual roles and how to build them up in that place so they can win together. I think maybe that's another thing to do. But I think the culture component of Western individualism may get into the way of that, but then it's up to a coach or the organization or maybe even the players to figure out how to make it work so we can reach the goal together.
Yeah, for sure. And I think, I mean, ultimately, maybe it's not even a bad thing that we have two different distinct cultures, you know.
Oh, for sure.
Specifically in regards to, you know, when we see them at Worlds, for example, if you see Korea versus NA, it's kind of that big heated battle. Whereas if it's Korea versus Korea, it's kind of like, well,
yeah, okay. You know what you're going to get, yeah.
Yeah, you just watch the bot or something later or some, you know, some feedbacks on YouTube. But it's, you know, it's understanding that there is that kind of different dynamic. There's that different approach, that different mindset. I think that what makes it so interesting to see these teams battling it out. And you bring up a really good point in regards to leadership. Do you think that on each team, having a distinct leader is important? Someone that can help to promote buy-in with other players who are uncertain about maybe training or scheduling or talking with, you know, getting support, talking with an allied health professional, you know, having someone who's there and, you know, one-on-one directly communicates with the coach to ensure that the players are on the same team.
Ooh, that's interesting. Is that important? Excuse me. I think that's a really good question. I think when I'm thinking about that question, I think it's really nice to have a strong voice on the team. I think it's important that each player does have a voice and plays a role on that specific team. I think to kind of mediate that, because I don't want to force someone to be like, you're the leader, you're the talker now. I would like to, if I could, groom them into it. Or if I see a player that's really strong, maybe they could help. By the same time, I think as a esports psychologist, my role is to make sure that I meet with each player individually to see what they're experiencing within the team, within themselves, what their perspectives is on the team. And then during team meeting, what I like to do is like either have a topic or have something, some type of talking point, or kind of guide a conversation where I can get everyone to speak together or to share their ideas or just share their thoughts. So even though if there is one specific leader that they can receive feedback and information. But at the same time, if there's not a leader, that they can also come together and communicate with each other more effectively. Because sometimes maybe the shot calling system is going to change from early game to mid game to late game. Maybe it's someone calling fights or engages versus someone calling macro. So depending on what people want to talk about, in my experience, depending on what people want to talk about and what they feel comfortable sharing or what roles they feel comfortable playing, then it's my job to kind of bring them all together so they can play those roles succinctly or as seamlessly as possible, for sure.
Yeah, for sure. And in your experience, do you see different kind of leadership styles compared to, you know, for example, League of Legends and compared to an FPS?
In my experience, yes, because the needs of the games are different. So, of course, if the needs of the games are different, the communication patterns and what they're going to be talking about and the style of communication be different. So, for example, looking at a Rainbow Six team versus a League of Legends team, what they are calming, what they're focusing on, what happens when someone dies, that whole system is different. And then shift that to like Valorant. That whole thing is different too versus League of Legends or another MOBA. So really looking at, this is the challenging thing. Even though I'm an esports psychologist, it's also my job to have a basic fundamental understanding of each individual freaking title, which is a whole different battle in itself. So like, and why that's important is because if I don't understand the game, just the basics of it or like the goals of it or what everyone's trying to pay attention to, then how am I supposed to understand the communication system or what's going on? So at least like I have to learn the game first. And then after that, then I can start seeing what they need and trying to provide them with different interventions to get there. But to answer your question, yes, each title, each team, in fact, has a different communication style, people playing different roles. And it's really being observant to what those things are, what those needs are, and then find the right people with the right skills to go in those right places. So it's a nice little like puzzle that you play with each team to either kind of like bring up the low voices, calm down the strong voices, like make everyone sing together so they all can play. So it's kind of like this nice little conducting balancing act that you kind of have to play with personalities, voices, goals, all those things.
Yeah, suddenly esports players are turning into choirs.
Yeah, dude. You gotta make or shut up. It's hard.
I definitely agree. I think communications is one of those pivotal things, especially in regards to, say, for example, a best of five, it's 2-2. We're coming down to the wires in the last couple of matches, rounds, for example, and you want to have short, crisp communications because it's pivotal. I had a chat with a couple of previous professional players, and they just completely agreed that, you know, having effective communication is one of those things that can make or break a team. If someone's comming something that's completely irrelevant and then everyone starts to shift the focus, the balance just completely gets thrown off. So I think being able to have effective communications, especially if there's an in-game leader on the team, for example, in Valorant, if we have someone who has that major role, that's their goal to ensure that everyone's kind of in sync with each other, everyone's, you know, in balance, in path, I think that's where we can really see some big impact. So I think I definitely agree in regards to comms and the importance of them as well.
Absolutely. I think with comms too, the thing that you need to see, people just think comms come or you're talking about things and because you played the game, like you know it's a comm. But then at the same time, like, I chunked this person. Okay, tell me, what does chunked mean? I chunked him. I chunked them. They're chunked. Is that like 50%? Is that like 75%? Is that a quarter? I don't know. I know that the guys hurt real bad. That's it. Does that mean they can come back? Does that mean I should watch out for them? Does that mean they're out of the fight? Like, what does that mean? So when people think of comms, like, what is the whole purpose of communication? Like, what type of communication pattern are we setting up? So all comms comes down to is setting up a system for that team because comms changes per team. So even setting up that system, like, okay, let's go over what's important to know. Okay. I'm hearing a lot of people say this. What does this mean? Okay, is there a better way to say this? Okay, you said it this way. And not only did you say it this, but you said it this way. So what does this mean when you say it this way? Okay, mm-hmm. You said it this way. Do you know what this person thought about or how it made them feel? Okay, is that good? So this whole system, like, it comes over time and being very intentional about what types of language you're using. What does that language mean? And how is this language going to work on our team? So all these things kind of have to be put down either like through VOD review or even in team meetings, or it's a very intentional process to create the system so it flows nicely. Because I think that's one of the most challenging things is like we all need to speak the same thing. Even though we're all speaking English or whatever, like we often know what each single word means and each single tone means with that word. So how can we develop that within our own team? And what is that? What do you want that to look like in general? So I think that's what's the challenging part is like it changes from team to team to team, even though some things are helpful.
Yeah, I definitely think it is individualistic compared to, you know, in regards to team dynamics and developing that kind of underlying team culture. Because, you know, we might have someone who's, you know, for example, a roster change. We have someone who's come in. Suddenly everyone's saying a different word and this person doesn't understand that word. And then the other person might be so used and indented to saying something else, for example, in regards to chunking. It was a good example. You know, they might say something in the heat of the moment and then everything kind of maybe collapse. So I definitely think it's definitely pivotal to ensure that everyone's on board and there's that kind of mutual understanding across the board for everyone. And whose job is that? Is that the coach? Is that the sports psych? Is that the manager? You know, is that the IGL? Whose goal is it to ensure that everyone's, you know, active and ensure that, you know, everyone's going to be able to perform?
Ooh, who's responsible? Damn, that's a tough one. Well, I think, holy shit. Well, I think that each person has a responsibility in it. So for example, if you're just a team with your friends, it's on you guys to figure out what this means. And if you really want to get good, then you have to develop that system. I think as a coach, and it's your responsibility to be observant, to really hear what your players are saying and then see and watch what happens when they say things and what are the actions that come from that. But if you're the coach, this is hard because each team has different roles and responsibilities for each staff member, and they want the coach to be able to do everything, which is impossible. So, and then is it esports or is it the sports psychologist to do it? I mean, we can do it. And that's what I like to specialize in because that's my trainees is communication, relationships, all those things. So I can definitely pick those things out easily. But here's the thing, like going back to that coaching system and that whole thing, like if it was up to me, and so if I was going to create an ecosystem for like League of Legends or even like Valorant or Overwatch or anything, I would have a head coach. And the responsibility of the head coach is to make sure everyone's playing together, can communicate, he's listening or she's listening, they're listening, they're watching, they're meeting the needs of the players and helping them play the game. Then I'd have a strat coach and an analyst that work hand in hand, that one, watch the games, generate the strategy with the coach or is able to communicate, this is what's happening to your players, because of course the head coach should know. But the strategy coach should be more in tune with the game, with the analysts of what's actually happened during the game. They can reform the strategy, maybe scout some teams, talk with the coach, and deliver the strategy that way. I would also have a positional coach, because each different position has different needs. It's going to have different micro plays or macro plays that they need to look out for, that other coaches won't know the fine nuances of how Sage moves, for example, or like this character will move in League of Legends. So having the positional coach to work one-on-one with the player. And then I have a sports or esports like, or professional psychologist like myself to work with each individual player to actually help them play. What's getting in their way? How are they doing? How are they doing? And maybe like with another player, maybe we can have synergy practices with two players. So like the bot lane or maybe like support and a fragger. I don't know, but helping them communicate better together. And then I think that would be the ultimate team. And of course, I'd throw in like nutritionists. I would throw like physical like trainers or physical therapists in there also. But really the problem is like when you ask like whose responsibility it is, like I guess it's the coaches and the players, because that's all they got. Because usually a head coach is like, okay, do it all. I want you to do the players, I want you to do the strategy, I want you to do the scouting, I want you to do the programming. It's like, bro, I'm just a coach. Like I what do you mean I have to do all that other stuff? Like what? Or the general manager comes in, it's like, dude, the general manager may have a BS or a BA in psychology. Now they want them to be the psychologist for the entire team. Like that's not the responsibility, dude. So I think that's another challenge or a problem. It's like really investing in the structure of your organization and making sure that you have all the pieces that work together to make a team, to take care of the team, not just individual people.
Yeah, definitely agree. And I think it comes back to, again, resource management and ensuring that, you know, there's a big difference between the pros and the amateurs, you know, or the semi-pros as well. Yeah. Each level of that chain is going to have access to different level of resources, and whether they can adopt only, you know, one or two of those coaches, although it can adapt the whole group. It comes down to, I guess, what's going to be the most effective and straight way. And then you have to get over the hill of, oh, some of these, you know, general managers or coaches aren't going to agree with these coaches.
Do
they want them on board? So it's definitely a big chain order, and it's definitely something that's really interesting to look at from that external perspective. I definitely agree.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think the organization to maybe prevent that, it'd be like, okay, you would, as an organization, you would have to have very strong mission, vision, values, goals that everyone can agree with and say like, hey, this is the way that we're going to do things. Are you on board? Even before you come in, because this is the culture that we're creating in this organization to make sure our team wins or succeeds this way. This is our definition of success. This is how we're going to move together. We need buy-in from everyone. Are you in? Are you out? Okay, I'm in. Okay, we're going to do it this way. And you agreed to it, right? Yes, I did. Okay. So now we're on the same team versus like, well, we sort of win. All right. Well, how do you want to win, dude? Like there's many ways to win. So what's the culture of this thing? And always going back to the culture to make sure that we're always on the consistent page together. But again, I absolutely, to speak on your point, like different organization levels will have different levels of support to actually push it, or even do they really care? Or is it just something that whoops it on a wall? So that's what the challenging thing is.
And I think it's that old age-old question of, hey, I got to this level without this help, so why would I adopt it now?
Oh, man. I think that's the most challenging things with players, too, because they even look at, like, Twitch, people on Twitch, or they look at other pros. Exactly. They say, oh, like, dude, this guy got here by, like, just playing and grinding his eyes off, and, like, that's how they won, or that's how they made the team. And it's like, true, that's definitely how they made it. Is there a better way? No, that's the only way, man. Like, that's the way we have to do it. But it's really asking that question of, like, is there a more efficient way to do that? Or, yes, things have had, like, the way that you got here, one, like, that's gotten you this much success. And what I'm saying is, for most of my players is, for example, like, I had this conversation many a times with them. Okay, what you've been doing, you've been staying up to, like, 5 o'clock in the morning. You don't eat Pop-Tarts. That's all you eat. You don't watch your VODs or anything. And you've gotten this good. You're, like, challenger. And now your goal is to get onto a pro team. Okay, what do you think will happen if you keep going this way? Have you improved a lot? No, I haven't. How come? I'm not sure. Okay, what are you willing to change? I don't want to change anything. Okay, well, you do know if you don't change, this is how good you're going to get, or you might get worse because other people might change and do things to get better. Like the things that you have done is great and they've gotten to a certain level. But here's the thing. If you want to get to the next level, you're going to have to do something different because that's how you get to the next level. And I ask them, even relating to their champions or relating to their game knowledge, or like, okay, how did you get out of like silver? Oh, I like picked up some different champions. I picked up new techniques and I learned this, this, and this, and then I did it. And then I jumped to gold like the next day. Mm-hmm. Okay. How is this jump any different? What? Oh, well, here's the junk thing though, dude. Once you make some changes though, you're going to experience some decrease in performance. Mm-hmm. Because most of my players to say like, dude, I've been trying to do what you do and I'm actually sucking now. It's like, well, why do you think? Because it doesn't work. Like maybe, but maybe it's because you're not quite sure about this technique or anything. And so you're trying it and you're not being very efficient at it. And then you're failing and then you're not picking it up yet. But once you pick it up, you're going to get there. So there is a lag time with any change that you make. So just because there's that lag of decreased performance doesn't mean that you're going to rebound twice as fast. But again, in the whole learning process, the first step is not knowing and not being able to do it, right? The second step is knowing it, but not being able to do it consistently. And that's the most frustrating step because it's like, mm-hmm. I know I'm supposed to be doing this thing, but I can't do it. Ugh. And the last one, when you got it, you know it and you can do it consistently. But here's a shitty thing. After you reach that step, you start all over again. Because that's how you go to the next level again, right? It's a consistent process of knowing, not knowing, then knowing, be consistent, and that whole struggle in the whole thing. So, mm-hmm. I mean, that's the whole thing too, like where you need to make some changes because what you've been doing only got you this far. You need to make some changes so you can get to the next level. It's just convincing yourself that when I start struggling in these changes and I start sucking again, that doesn't mean that I'm bad or anything. It's just I'm learning to get to the next stop.
Yeah, definitely. And I think to add on to that, I guess we can look at that that knowing but then not incorporating, or knowing but ignoring, that kind of dealing with ambivalence. One of those ones where, you know, some players understand that, hey, before a game, it's good to take a step back, it's good to do some breathing, but don't do it. It's good to do some wrist stretches before a best of five or a 40-minute league game, but then don't do it. It's good to start to adopt a little bit of physical activity on the sides, but then don't do it. They understand that these things can help to increase their performance down the line, but then actively don't engage with it and don't do it. So is it then again a matter of, you know, having the coach or having some other players step in and helping?
I mean, how many metaphors do you want, man? You can take a horse to water. You can show someone the door. You can do so many things. But I mean, I think the one story that comes to my mind is like I had this coach who, when I was working at USC, like they would come into practice, or at the time they were an analyst, and dude, like they looked like they got into a street fight. Like they had black and blue eyes. They looked so messed up. I'm like, okay, listen, what happened to you, man? Like, you look like shit. And they're like, dude, I haven't been sleeping. Like, I've been doing all these things. And like, you got to like take a break and like take a rest and budget or be more disciplined or have a schedule because you need sleep, dude. Like, you look like shit. And then this year he comes back and he's a monster of a coach. And I was like, brother, what did you change? Because you actually have life in your face. Like, your thoughts are amazing. It's so crisp and they connect really nicely. He's like, man, I actually like got sleep. I was like, okay, what made that change for you? And he's like, well, like I was like listening to this talk, or, you know, I really wanted to make this change because at my other team, that's what they're talking about. And I actually got like 7 hours of sleep and my thoughts were so crisp. I actually saw a jump in performance. Like I could actually do everything. I was so much more efficient at things. And so like now I prioritize my sleep. So it's like, maybe it's even tasting it or trying it, maybe like a new food. Like, I don't want to eat lettuce because it's disgusting. But then you see like, oh my gosh, after you eat lettuce, like I feel really good. So it's actually trying and understanding and really thinking if that's going to work for you. But at the same time, like, you know, these things help you. Mm-hmm. And if you want to get to the next level, I'm sorry. These are just things you have to do. I don't like eating vegetables. But at the same time, I know they're good for me. And if I don't, then my poop hurts. So I have to eat the vegetables, right? So in the mm-hmm. same way, like, these are just things you do now. Like, you're old. Sorry, I'm like a boomer. And I have to stretch now just to, like, feel good. It's before, like, oh, I can just stretch when I work out. But no, it's just a thing I do now. I stretch, you know? Or like, dude, your car needs gas. It's a thing you do now. Like, you go get gas for your car. That's just something you have to do. I'm sorry. That's the mm-hmm. tax you pay for having a car. So if, I mean, maybe it's those things too. If like, I understand you don't want to do these things and I know it's not fun or it's not sexy, but as a pro, if you want to maintain your level or even get better or improve, this is just a thing you do now. oh, but I don't want to. I know, dude, no one really wants to do it. It's just, you just have to do, I don't know what to tell you. Like, this is some the part of the process that you have to do. But I understand if you don't want to do that, but at the same time, you have to also accept that you may not go as high. Are you okay with that? And if the answer is yes, then we have bigger problems. And why are you here being a pro? Mm-hmm. Like, if the answer is yes, that you want to get this good, why are you here?
Yeah.
Like, wouldn't you want to get better? So I think that's that your own cognitive dissonance of, I want to be lazy, I don't want to do these things, but then at the same time, I don't want to be bad. Mm. So either you accept that this is a part of the process of becoming a really good high-level esport athlete that I have to do to maintain my tool, which is myself, my hands, my brain, my body, which is my tool. So if that's something like critical to your craft, should you be taking care of it? Like, for example, I wish this wasn't the case, but like if you're fighting someone coming in and all you had was a sword or something, wouldn't you want to take that care of that sword really, really well? Because if your sword fails, you're kind of screwed,
right?
Or shield or whatever you have. So wouldn't you want to take care of this thing that you, this implement that you have? In the same way, that's your body, that's your brain, that's your knowledge, that's your learning. So you need to really dedicate yourself to your craft. So when you're ready and you're in battle, that thing is like, just cuts through things like butter because you've taken care of it. In the same way, shouldn't your body be the same? Shouldn't your mind be the same? Shouldn't all those things be the same? Because that's your tool. That's your weapon. So I think that's kind of hard. Like, how do you describe that to somebody of like, oh yeah, you, oh, really interesting too. Like, something I've read in the article studies that I do on my Twitch and stuff is that like, even when you're tired, your brain recruits different areas of your brain to do things that other areas are supposed to do. So for example, frontal lobe,
right.
You think about critical thinking, you think about emotion regulation, you think of strategy planning, all those things, right? But once you get tired, it shifts from here to like your temporal or parietal. So like, you think that you're doing that thing because your brain is your brain and it's going to do it because you have to, because you can't not think, because then if you didn't think, you'd be dead, right? So it helps you do it, but it's not doing it as efficiently, but you don't notice the switch. And the thing is, like, maybe the speed is still there, but the quality is there, or the quality isn't there, but the speed is there. So you still think, oh, I can do it, but you're not. So even thinking about how your brain is functioning in esports is all your brain. So you can't tell, which is the shitty thing. So that's why it's important that you maintain all the habits that you have so you can work at the highest level. Or something I've been talking about on my podcast have been also like state-dependent learning. Mm-hmm. So state-dependent learning being like, my favorite example is like beer pong.
Right, okay.
Okay, so if you're over 21, you know exactly what I'm talking about. Beer pong is a game where you basically take solo cups, you fill them with beer or water, and then you try to make the cup with the ping pong ball standing on the other side of the table. Most oftentimes, you people do this drunk, because if you sing a cup, then you have to drink some beer or alcohol or whatever. So you learn this game inebriated, right? Like, have you ever played, or if you've ever tried to play beer pong sober, like, let me know how the experience went. Mine personally has been terrible. Like, it's bad. Like, you just, because you didn't learn it. You learned it messed up. And so practice how you play. State-dependent learning. So if I practice drunk, I play better drunk too. This is not saying, like, caveat, don't play drunk or whatever. This is performance. But, like, maybe the snarky player would say, like, oh, well, you know, I learned this game sleepy, so I got to play it sleepy. And it's like, well, I mean, true. And I think that's what happens sometimes with players when they mess up their sleep schedule. Say they train all that night, like 3-4 o'clock in the morning, and they have a game at 12. And so they have to shift their whole sleep schedule back so they can wake up for the game at 12. And now they're extra tired or not used to be up this early to play. And now their performance sinks. So it's kind of like, okay, you've practiced sleepy. Now you kind of shift yourself, so you can't do this. But then the real question is then, well, do you like this quality of life?
Mm-hmm.
If the answer is yes, then there's not, it's kind of hard to create change if they like it. But if the answer is no, then okay, now we can start a conversation of like, oh, you don't like this, what can we do to make it better? What are you willing to do? Here's all the studies or the information, what's your choice? Unfortunately, I can't make them choose correctly exactly you and what you want to do, because at the end of the day, as a psychologist, your success is yours. I'm here to play support, dude. I'm here to give you buffs, shields, but I can't go out there and play the game myself or win the game myself. Like, I can only empower you to what you want to do. I have all the potions, I have all the research, I have all the suggestions, but which is the one that you are going to use to actually win?
I love that analogy. That's a good one. That's a really good one. being that support player to, I guess, not be the one that can carry the team because the players or the ADCs or the mid players are the ones that are going to do that. That's awesome. I love that. And I think I definitely agree in regards to prior when you talked about kind of, you know, a sleepy player wants to train and play sleepy. You know, is it a matter of then, you know, when we look at cognitive fatigue and, you know, the effects of cognitive fatigue on, you know, a best of five, for example, is it better to help with these players, you know, if they're scrimming or if they're practicing, to, you know, really go out and, you know, play like a best of seven, for example, in during scrims, so they can start to adopt and understand and relate to that kind of cognitive fatigue mindset, and then they can start to, I guess, accumulate and build on and be accustomed to it?
That's a great question. And I think I would model the training a little bit closely to maybe traditional sports.
Mm.
And what I mean by that is like, okay, well, say you have a best of what, five coming up with a weekend. Okay, well, maybe I would taper that with like, okay, let's have a couple of best of threes first. And then maybe like as it gets closer, maybe wrap up the game to best of fives. Because I think when you're talking about cognitive fatigue, one, there's a lot of ways we can address cognitive fatigue. One is the structure of how we train, right? So for example, if I'm running track, our schedule was like really hard day Mondays, technical days Tuesdays, Wednesdays was like more techniques and like actual sprints. Thursdays was maybe more hard, and then Friday was a rest day, so we could perform on Friday. So I would kind of model that same thing with your cognitive load and your cognitive endurance. But at the same time, there's so many other things we can be doing. We can be doing like actual sleep, rest and recovery. We could do learning days. We could do VOD review days to actually like have something to learn. We could do lighter training. Maybe it's work with that individual coach to like work on your mid lane skills or something. So there's different things that we can do to prevent cognitive fatigue. But when I think about cognitive fatigue too, like that's tilt. That's impulsive plays. That's all of it. All of those things come from cognitive fatigue. So maybe even in that way, we cater all the skills or all the interventions to prevent cognitive fatigue. Maybe we don't have to talk about performance. Maybe talk about like, hey, how are you doing, dude? Like, how's your mind? Dude, I'm so tired. Pilot. Well, I know something that might help with that. Are you interested in it? First, you're going to play better if you do this thing. Like, oh, so you're tired? Like, oh, how many energy drinks today? Dude, man, this is like my fifth monster, like an eighth cup of coffee. It's like, okay. How are you feeling after those things? Dude, I feel jittery. Like, I don't want to talk to anybody. Okay, do you like that? Dude, fuck, dude. Of course I don't like it. Okay, well, I got something. You want to change that? So maybe that's another way we can kind of get into it. But really, when I think about cognitive fatigue, there's so many. There's schedules. There's routines. There's the actual, like, tapering off and on of games. There's the rest and recovery period. There's so many things we can do with it. So I think that's a huge, huge piece. I mean, I think other people have done, like, trying to do mindfulness and visualization and all those things. There's a lot that can prevent cognitive fatigue. But it's selling it.
Yeah, I agree. Whilst you were speaking, it makes me think of, you know, essentially just periodization. You know, in traditional sport, we have periodization of training, whether that be specifically doing something during a block and then, you know, changing it to another block. And so those blocks are kind of intertwined within each other. And then being able to, you know, based on those blocks, have a better positive result ultimately. So I think, you know, what it comes down to is definitely, as you said, you know, being able to adopt and understand that cognitive fatigue will be a part of ourselves eventually. It will happen. And being able to mold our understanding around that understanding to then understand, okay, how can we adopt this? How can we start to be accustomed to it? And how can we deal with it? And I think it's one of those things that definitely it's important for someone like yourself to be on a part of a team to help players, you know, get that kind of support individually, to help them overcome and to understand, hey, I can maybe start to adopt this, whether it be, as you said, some mindfulness, some visualization, some breathing, starting to understand different techniques to help the player relax and maintain their performance.
For sure. I think if I was an individual player, where I would start with cognitive fatigue is, do you realize it? I think awareness is giant. Like, how do you know when you're tired, or how do you notice when your performance is dipping? Because I think that's where a lot of players don't realize it, that it's happening. Because how can you change something you have no awareness, right? Mm-hmm. So the first step is understanding, like, what are your symptoms of cognitive fatigue? How do you know when you're tired? Okay, then after you realize this, now we can put up other things to kind of support it. But first, it's understanding, this is how I feel. This is what happens. These are the triggers. This is when I know that I'm tired. So I think after that, having the awareness, the next thing is having the intentionality to do something different, or maybe even to accept it, like accepting that I am tired now. And I'm not a machine. I can't keep going to preserve my own mental or continue to perform at the highest level that I can. I need to do X, Y, and Z. Then it's the intentionality of actually doing something and being okay with that. So maybe awareness, acceptance, intentionality there to help actually notice and do something different.
Yeah, for sure. And I think that kind of intertwines nicely in regards to maybe something like self-confidence and self-efficacy. That kind of in a battle between, hey, I understand I can do something. I have the belief I can actually
perform
this specific task. I have the belief in, you know, for example, CSGO that I can efficiently hold long with an AWP. But, you know, that cognitive fatigue might be starting to become, you know, overwhelming and they might not be aware of it, like you said. And that's kind of like that battle versus reality versus belief. And I think that's, yeah, definitely an interesting kind of topic on how we can try and insinuate, well, you know, we're going through these things, but I know you can believe you can do it. And you have that kind of mindset that you've done it before. You've done it before in different situations, but now we're trying to understand how we can adopt.
Man, you are talking about layers, dude. You're talking about layers. the question I have is like, if you're so cognitively tired and like you're just like fatigued and maybe it's not going right, how are you supposed to do that self-efficacy piece? It's almost impossible because, I mean, if the way that it's going, then if you're talking about confidence, oftentimes people look for, it's moments, I don't know why the human psyche is like this, but it's so much easier to find bad or negative things or self-criticize and ourselves or be our own worst critic. So if we're tired, I don't know about you, but those thoughts often are so much easier to access than the positives. I got to keep going. I have to push through this. That's why I don't run marathons. It's crazy. I would die if mile one. But even thinking about that, so that's why it's even more important that you make sure that you have that cognitive endurance. So, and that awareness of when it's coming, you can actually have that plan of, okay, when I'm feeling tired, I might say these things. And then what am I going to do in response? So you have a contingency plan even before you're fatigued. So when you hear that voice, you already know it's like, okay, I'm tired. And this is what's happening. So I can do this thing differently versus like having nothing like, oh, is that voice right? Can I hold long? I don't know. What am I doing here? Oh my God, I lied. Right. So yeah. I think even like cognitive fatigue would even supersede that confidence issue or even supersede that self-efficacy issue. So maybe you have to take care of your brain before all those other things happen, because that's higher level thinking right there. That meta thinking is higher than your anatomy or your physically tired. So, and of course your brain affects your perspective. It affects your mood. It affects everything, your thought quality, all of it. So if you don't have a sound brain or well rested and, I guess good brain, like how are you supposed to do all the higher order stuff? It just doesn't happen. It's not going to happen.
Yeah, I completely agree. And then how do we address those players who look at this situation and just think, oh, I just have to get through it. I just have to be mentally tough. And this kind of role of mental toughness starts to play a role. They start to think, you know, they start to maybe have a little bit of that self-talk. Yeah, I'm tired. Yeah. I know I can do it. But yeah, I know I've done it before. I can definitely do this. I know I can do it. How can we kind of integrate that?
Man, when you said that, I'm just thinking about, I'm a big UFC fan. Love the UFC. You got some right. Nice fighters in off from Australia. And dude, when I'm thinking about that, I'm thinking about like round five, you gave it your all. And now it's time to dig deep and be mentally tough. I don't think going into the fight, you're like, okay, I have to be mentally tough now. I have to be mentally tough. Like you're going to the fight. Like you got all your energy reserves. You're going in there to like scrap and bang because you've done the preparation. But mentally tough, I feel like that shouldn't be something that you just need to be doing all the time, because your preparation should already be like, you should already be tough. But it's in those moments when you are like, just I've hit the wall and I'm so tired. I gave it everything. Okay, now I have to dig deep and just push through. Pushing through should not be a daily thing. Like that's something like on the daily, you should have these daily practices to practice like being strong or putting money into the bank of your cognitive endurance. Like what are those things that can support your endurance to prolong your cognitive quality of thoughts and things like that versus like, oh man, I haven't focused on it all. And now it's time to be tough. It's like, no. Yeah. I've been practicing and this is just a thing I do now. So I am tough. I don't need to be tough in this moment. It's like, okay, I gave them all. It's round five. It's the best of five. It's like the last game, late game. Okay, now I'm tired, but I have to push through it. Okay, that's emergency situations. You should prep. So you have a strong mind going into the game, not using your reserves to be strong all the time. That's not, that doesn't just sound fun at all. I mean, thinking about that, like, oh, that sounds bad, man. That sounds like a bad training.
Yeah, for sure. And I think that kind of also kind of adopts, there's so many things that can be adopted by it, like that kind of arousal and being over aroused versus under aroused. And, you know, that kind of, again, it's very individualized specific.
Absolutely.
So, you know, working with different teammates or, you know, individuals, everyone's going to have a different approach.
Yep.
So there's so many different, it feels like, you know, we're almost the spider in the web. There's so many different angles that we can be looking at. How can we try and adopt so many different measures to ensure adequate performance, especially in the most dire and desperate of situations?
Yeah, I cannot agree more. Something that's really, I think that's what makes the whole thing so fun, I would say, is understanding like what players need, what different players need. And I think that's why it's more important to understand what you as a player need. So something that I like to ask in the beginning of the season with my players is like, okay, what do you need to get ready? Do you want to do mindfulness? Do you need to be up? Do you need to be down? Do you need to be chill? Do you need to be excited? Like, what is, do you want to play music? And so when I was there in person, some people were like, okay, I need to like breathe and be chill. Okay, you guys come with me. And then the guy's like, oh, I need to be like up. I was like, okay, you three, go like run, just go run, go like yell, do whatever you need, get jacked up and come back here. And then today, like come back here in 5 minutes and like, we're going to get this. So it's really getting yourself into that place that you need to perform to, so you feel confident and ready, because everyone is different, like you said. But then it's making sure that you're in your peak performance zone so you can perform, and then coming together as a team to do so. So it's hard because each person has that different level. So as a coach or a player, how do you get yourself ready for your own game and then come together as a team?
There's so many different aspects, and it's it really is crazy when you do start to think about it. I think that's what makes it fun in regards to looking at understanding it, the different layers, because there's so many different layers. You know, if someone's ready, if someone's not ready, if they're feeling relaxed, if they're feeling stressed, how can we kind of, you know, down regulate that and make sure they're ready? Does this player perform stressed? Do they like playing stressed? Do they perform well while being stressed? There's so many different modalities and roads that we can start to look at that can start to integrate into peak performance as well.
Absolutely. The thing that I like to reference is the Yerkes-Dodson stress model. And it's a very simple model. It's a bell curve. And on one, it's like arousal. And then on the other one, it's like performance. And so the reason I like to use this stress model with my players is to say like, okay, look, you need some type of arousal or stress, whatever you want to call it, to perform. Like this shows it's a bell curve. So on this one, it's like no arousal, performance. So if there's no arousal, dude, you have no performance. But on the other side, you have too much arousal. Guess what? You have no performance too, because you're too overwhelmed. You need that nice little Goldilocks sweet point of arousal to perform, but it's per person, right? It's per person, depending on how much arousal they need to perform their highest or to perform their best. So why I like to use that with players is like, okay, how are you interpreting your arousal? Are you interpreting stress as something that should be avoided and it's bad and it kills you, because that's something we need to talk about? Or how can we frame, okay, my hands are shaking, my heart is beating, my thoughts are running really fast, oh my God, I'm freaking out. How can we reinterpret that to, okay, when my heart is beating, that means my body's getting ready to meet this challenge. My hand is shaking because I just can't wait to grab that keyboard and mouse to smash people. My thoughts are running really fast because I need all these thoughts and strategies, because this is what I'm thinking about in this moment. And this, when this happens, I know I'm ready. Versus, oh my God, man, I'm freaking out, dude. Like everything is happening so fast. I'm sweating. I cannot breathe. Like, so it's even reinterpreting and maybe even reimagining, what are these signals that happen to you? And is this a go, I'm ready, or I'm scared? And how can we work together to reframe those things for you? Because again, these are just symptoms of your body. It's the same thing that would happen if a saber-toothed tiger came in the middle of the night and you had a spear. Same thing would happen. So how can we interpret this to this is your body's response to rise to the challenge versus, oh shit, something bad's going to happen, so I'm going to die. So that preparation process also of understanding your bodily functions and how that's going to affect your performance and what's your interpretation of them.
Yeah, I completely agree. And I also think we can kind of add into the mix there that kind of, you know, choking aspect. Now, we see it in so many big teams, so many big tournaments. Maybe it's the Titan team versus the underdogs, but suddenly, you know, the underdogs are starting to rise, and then suddenly the Titans are starting to choke. They're starting to get, you know, stressed, they're starting to get anxious about where they can perform. You know, they've crushed them previously in previous tournaments, nowhere near in regards to performance, but suddenly the underdogs are starting to rise. And then suddenly you have that kind of battle where it's like, okay, this team's a lot better, you know, from a standpoint, from an external perspective, but the underdogs are really starting to take control. And then that kind of impact on the elite team's mindset, you know, can we do this? And that kind of self-belief, whether they can do it. And that's when they start to choke, and that's when they start to be succumbed to the pressure.
Absolutely. Something that came to my mind when I was listening to you speak is it's the funniest paradox with fear. Mm-hmm. And what I mean by that is I think Valentine's Day just came up, so it's the most thing that's in my head. Like, take like when you want to talk to somebody and you see them, you get really excited and you get really nervous to ask this person on a date. And so what are you afraid of? Oh man, I'm afraid of looking stupid. I'm afraid that they're going to say no. I'm afraid that like, it's not going to happen. I'm not going to say, I don't know. Something bad's going to happen. So what happened? That either don't do it, you go up all nervous, and because you're all nervous, you come out awkward, like, oh, hey, you want to, maybe, what do you want to go to the movies with me? of course. But, you know, like, then what happens? And you crash and burn. And that thing that you're afraid of actually happened versus what would be the difference if you're like, I'm just going to go for it, dude. Like, hey, yeah. if you're free, like, you want to go, like, watch a movie with me? Yeah, sure. Or, nah, okay, then, okay, cool. We did it. So the thing that you're afraid of actually happens because you're thinking about it, and then the way that you respond because you're afraid of it makes it become true. So attaching that to the games, here's the thing. When I was also hearing you speak with the choking aspect, it sounds like a big part of that scenario was either the team or the player was unable to stay in the present and instead was thinking about the future of what this thing would mean if I lost or I won. Or they're sticking in the past of, oh, I choked in previously, and because I did this, this is going to happen again. So in games, I think it's so important, and just like life too, it's so important that we remain present and grounded in what is happening in the here and now, because with each game, it's a new game. The last game doesn't fucking matter. The next game doesn't matter. It's what am I doing right now? And what's going to matter in the next 5 to 10 minutes, maybe, depending on how long the game is, that's what matters. But more importantly, okay, this is the game state now. And again, I'm accepting that this is game state now. We're in the best of five, and we didn't expect to be here. We're in the fifth game. Okay, this is where we are. All right, so what am I going to do this game to make me successful, to help my team? Because this matters now, not future, not past, here. So it's being able to, one, don't do the fear thing, because then that's going to happen, but instead be grounded in the present and staying here and doing what matters now. So I think that's a big part of choking, is people get too stuck in the future or too stuck in the past, and then things happen versus taking care of here and now.
Yeah, for sure. And I think you can add on, you know, when players do think about the future, they think about the stress, they think about maybe the coaches or the managers, they invested so much into the team, they don't want to let them down. And absolutely, I think that also plays
their team also. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, exactly. One of the biggest roles. And I think that's, you know, really interesting when you look at it from a individualized esports perspective versus a team perspective, because something like StarCraft, for example, all the blame's on yourself. Everything that you do, it's a one-on-one, it's a one-man army. You're literally, it's just you versus them. And so every move, you'll have to have that kind of self-accountability. And so it really comes down to, well, you know, maybe previously I have lost, but, you know, let's forget about that. Let's focus on the moment. I love that. I love being able to be grounded and understand that, you know, whatever happens in the future, it's in the future. I think you see it in real life in regards to, you know, so many things. There's so many examples, you know, doing a speech, a project, an assignment, you know, doing a presentation in front of a class. I think that's one of the big ones that ticks the boxes for a lot of people. You know, they get up, they're so nervous. The teacher, who's going first? Not me. And then all of a sudden they get up there, they smash it out, they get an A. It's like, you know, whatever happened? Why was I so stressed about that?
Absolutely.
I hyper-focused on something that didn't even happen. I wasted so many resources on something that didn't occur. So it's one of those things where it's important to have that understanding, definitely.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I think too, like, people forget.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's whatever. There's always another game. Even at the pro level, sure, it's bad. But at the same time, there's also another game. And I think too, when it comes down to like people trusting you, or sometimes like, yes, I can see how that's a lot of pressure where, oh my gosh, these people are counting on me and they're trusting me to do this thing. At the same time, dude, that's a privilege that you've gotten. You've earned that privilege to be in that spotlight. You've earned that privilege where people trust you. So if you want to do right by them, you got to do it, baby. You got to do you. And here's the best thing too. Like, if you don't perform, how can you perform with the team? So even more so, it's taking care of what you need and playing your best, because if you're there, then your team can play with you versus, oh no, everyone's looking at me, I don't know what to do. Then your team's like, dude, I don't know how to respond to you because it's not how you usually play. So if you play your best, you play your game, you take care of what you need to do, then your team is going to take care of itself. So that's something mm-hmm. even more so that you don't really need to think about. You just need to be the best you so your team can play with you.
Yeah, for sure. And I think another interesting standpoint to view it as is, say, for example, if you're playing League and you go into solo queue versus playing in a preset 5, going into solo queue, it could be a lot more toxic. And we could add in that dimension of trolling. Trolling, I know what a troll is. You know what a troll is. I've been a troll before.
Hey, brother.
there'll be a couple of listeners who don't quite understand what a troll is, especially in regards to esports and in regards to how it can really set someone off or, you know, make someone lose all their performance. So how would you explain what a troll is and how that really, you know, has that big effect on someone's cognitive feeling?
All right. The best part of that article is that they actually like use academic language to describe a troll.
Yeah.
Basically, what a troll is someone that doesn't have the same goals as you in the game, or same goals as a developer, and they play to their own win conditions. And typically it's not to win the game. It's either to make their teammates not have a good time. Maybe it's to flex their muscles or their cognitive or mental muscles on someone to basically hold them hostage. But in conclusion, trolls are people who don't want to play the game correctly, quote unquote, for the right reasons or for how the game was supposed to be intended. So maybe they'll just die a lot on purpose or you lose. Maybe they'll just flame you really hard, which is like just call you names and just try to rip you down. Maybe it's, I don't know. I think those are the biggest one, inting. And like, I think those are the two hugest ones. So basically when I think about trolls though, going back on our other point, what I think a troll is someone that's cognitively fatigued. Like that's really what happens, because I mean, yes, they also don't have the same goals that you have, but if you think about what happens when you turn into a troll, that's what happens. You're just tired. You're tired. You're tired of this bullshit. You just want to win a game. You're just trying to have a good time. And so, dude, you've lost all control of this, because I mean, how many games I'm sure that you've won when you've had trolls on your team and you're like, I don't care what this guy does or this person, this player does. I'm still going to play my best and your team's able to win. Sure. So I mean, I think that's what really happens, really what trolling and trolling behaviors is. It's a short circuit of frontal lobes, or you're just tired. So I think the way to prevent trolls is, well, know what you're going in the game for and understand and accept that you're going to wade through the waters of trolls. I think don't feed them, because what trolls want to do is they want to interact with you. It's really weird. It's like, I want to play this game with you, but I want to have control over you. So I'm going to do this weird thing where, you know, you're mad. So you interact with me because I just want interaction. So my, my fun thing to manage trolls is make them happy in the ways that they don't want to be happy. Like, I think trolls want to play games so they can be happy, and just their way of being happy is making other people mad. But my reverse troll is, I want to make you happy too, dude. But let you know that it's okay to be a troll and that I still love you. it's a really funny question, because either way they answer it, it's wrong. It's like, well, dude, is this fun? Are you having fun, like, being mean to me or being a troll? And they say yes. And I'm like, I'm glad that you're having game and that you're having fun, man. And yes, you're doing great. And yeah, okay, I'm going to donate my 10 minutes to you. And even though we might lose, at least I'm going to have a good time and know that you're having a good time too. And oftentimes that makes them stop talking because no, I don't enjoy this. And I say, oh man, then sorry, dude, like, what's going to make you happy? Like, how can I help you enjoy this game more? Or like, what can I do to make your time here a little more enjoyable? Like, will a win help, or like just losing? What do you want, man? And so that also makes them shut up, because yes, if they're say that they want me to make them or they enjoy it, then good, I'm happy. But if they say no, then it's okay, we can problem solve. Like, what's going on, dude? So Because they'll message me after, like, yeah, dude, sorry, I had a bad game last time. Like, I didn't mean so mean. I've never had anyone, like, message me being more upset. And if they did, I just said, okay, good game, man. Like, I hope you have more fun in your next games. Be happy. See you later. And then that pisses them off more, which makes me happy. So I guess it's a double win for me. But that's meeting the needs of the trolls in a different way. I think trolling behavior is just really common. But I think at the same time, when it comes down to trying really hard, it's just you're just really tired. And you're trying to meet your own needs and your own happiness in a different way. But unfortunately, sometimes it's not the best ways.
Yeah, I completely agree. It's also it's almost as if someone's I think one of the most common tears is that, you know, trolls feed on people's tears. You know, they feed on the salt. The salt is someone's energy. And I can definitely relate to that in so many situations across all games, especially in something like StarCraft, for example, you know, six pooling someone on purpose, and then just, you know, copying a, you know, as soon as you see after the game they've added you to their friends, oh, you know what's about to happen. you know it's about to begin. And I think it's one of those things. But, you know, on the flip side is, you know, we have that kind of side effect of a troll where if someone's really performing, maybe if they're in solo queue, maybe they're one game off a promotion into, you know, gold or, you know, whatever, diamond or even GM or something, and they get a troll on their team. And suddenly there's that disparity between I want to perform really well, but then on the other hand, someone's holding me back. It's also like, it's also as if there's a slingshot behind me and I can't keep going forward. I know that previously I had a previous player message me saying, you know, I was, you know, grinding so hard days on days. You know, I was so close to Radiant in Valorant. And then all of a sudden he queued into like three solo queues and he had like three trolls. And that, you know, majorly set him back mentally as well, because he had so much of that mental investment into the game. So, you know, is it more so just turn them off, forget about them, rebound back, say, okay, that was that game. Like we talked about earlier, that was that game. That was in the past. Going to the next game positively, have that kind of positive affirmation that, okay, next game's going to be different. Next game, there won't be any trolls. But then what if there is?
Oh, my God. There will be. Answer. Short answer, there will be. Here's the challenge too. Well, I think as a psychologist, my approach has always been, I really believe in your own self-efficacy and your own power. And I, even though, yes, I want to account for other things, other outside factors that may affect your performance, that may affect, your rank or other things that may come up. My question to my players has always been like, okay, what can you do? Well, I don't know. I don't know what to do if I encounter a troll. Like, what's in your power? Can you chat? Can you interact with them? Can you regulate your own anger about what's happening? Do you need to take a break? What's your strategy for your climb? What are things that you can do? Because you can't control someone else that's going to it. You can't control a troll that's going to be a troll. In fact, when you try to do, guess what? They just become bigger. They become a bigger freaking troll because they know that you care now and they're just going to inch you harder. So is that going to help you? No. So, all right, here's the thing. Do you think this is the last troll you're going to encounter? No. Do you think this is the last troll you're going to encounter in your promo matches? No, it's going to happen. So what do you do next time? Because don't get me wrong, bitching and moaning definitely helps. Bitch and moan. Come, let's go. Yeah, this guy sucked. Yes. I got you. How do you feel? I feel better, or I feel up his head. Okay. So what are we going to change? Why do I have to change? Well, you're who I'm working with. I can't change the other person. So how are you going to prepare next time when a troll comes? You know, do you have a special routine? Are you going to take some breaks? Are you going to make sure that you don't queue in the next 10 minutes to get this person? You know, oh, but I was so close. And because you're so close, I know that you can do it. Did you think this is a rarity? This is the one shot you had to become Radiant? No. Or yeah, I was. Why do you think that? That's a bigger problem for me. Because if you think that this is your one shot and this is the only time it's going to happen, then how'd you get here? By luck? By chance? Because if it's luck and chance, dude, listen, we can't repeat that. So then we have to be even more intentional and break down your strategy to get here. What are you focusing on? What are you learning? Because this is not a one-shot thing. And if it is, then you don't deserve to go pro, because this is who you are, the way you train, the way you learn, the way you prepare. Because I'm sorry, maybe part of it too is accepting there's going to be a shit ton of trolls in your way. That's part of it. I'm sorry. But once you accept that fact, yes, okay, is it unfair? Absolutely. But what are you going to do next time? So it's really focusing on individual player, again, those self-regulation techniques, because I'm guessing once that troll came, now they become a troll and they're going to queue up really insecure for the next two ones. And now maybe, yeah, there's other trolls, but now they're also a troll that can't think or problem solve on the fly or find that win condition that they need to. So maybe it's them stopping because, boop, this is gone and they're tired and they're a troll now. So it's really working on that individual to find what they control next time, how they can calm down, how they refocus. And maybe it's just taking a break and today, I'm done today, and tomorrow I'm going to hit it twice as hard. Maybe that's it. So
yeah,
there's ways to deal with it, but it's really looking back into yourself, in my opinion.
Yeah, definitely. For me personally, when I was previously playing StarCraft, trying to get into GM when I was Masters, and then I just constantly got cannon rushed. And that really set me off in regards to I was so close, but then just, you know, back to back, like five in a row, the cheese was just so strong.
Yeah,
the cheese was smelly ass. And it's the same thing in, you know, something like CSGO or anything. And it's, you know, there's so many different things that we can't control. And I agree with you 100%. You know, we got there previously. We can do it again. It's not the one big chance. It's definitely not. It's not a one unique time, one in a lifetime opportunity. We've gotten there before, so we can definitely get there again and beyond. So I definitely think it's that kind of mindset switch that we need to turn on and say, hey, okay, maybe this person's having a bad day. You know, what's going on in this other person's life? Why are they doing this? Maybe they're feeling negatively. Maybe something's happened to them. And that we can start to maybe resonate and, you know, maybe feel a little bit more of that, not really emotional connection, but that understanding that, hey, maybe they're having a bad day. Okay, I'm not going to really try and let that affect me. I'm just going to try and play my best, do what I can do. Maybe it's just, you know, muting the chat or something. But, you know, those kind of things that, you know, develop that understanding of what's going on.
Absolutely. And I think to that point of developing empathy for the troll, I mean, think of that. It's not only maybe your promotion match, maybe it's theirs. And maybe they became a troll because they're maybe participating in some self-handicapping behavior. Oh my God, I didn't think I was going to make this promotional match, but now I'm here and I'm freaking out. Oh, I guess we lose now. And now I'm really negative. And I guess if I was only, you know, played better, or if I only had better teammates, or if only I didn't troll, I knew I could have gotten to the next level. Because I mean, you don't know what that other player is thinking about. You don't know how long that other player has been playing. You know what they're thinking. Maybe they just want power and control of another person, and that's what they're playing for. So really, if you're trying to grind and get there, understanding that there's going to be people like this. But again, always going back down to for you and your cannon rush. Okay, I got cannon rush and it really sucked. Okay, maybe, yes, it's frustrating. Let me rewatch this VOD because maybe I need to get better at learning when the cannon rush is coming, what I can do to prevent it, and then I can have a better counter. So next time when I get there and I see the cannon rush, oh, easy. I know how to counter and I'll beat them twice as fast because they've invested a shit ton of resources to beat these cannons, but I scouted them. I know where they are. I'm going to fuck them up. So, I mean, there's all ways to look at it too after you got trolled. Is like, okay, how can I get better at dealing with trolls, or what is the thing that I want to take away from this game so I know what to do better next time? Because I think as long as you're learning through all of your games, you're improving. And that's all we can really ask, because here's the thing with success and rank and all this kind of stuff, it's not a true picture of your skill level. And why? Well, because you probably use different heroes to get there, or champions to get there, or operators to get there. You probably did it at different times during the day. You probably had to learn different things here and there to pick up different like skills or whatever you need to get there. So you're still learning constantly and your success isn't linear. So I think people think that like, oh, if I'm all doing these things, I'm working hard, I should have this like linear like trajectory. It's not that way. And I'm sorry. You go back, you go down, you go left, you go right. Then you can like shoot up. So really it's a day by day process and it's not always straight. And I think sometimes too, we get frustrated because of the just world, you know, fallacy where good things should happen to good people and bad things should happen to bad people. That's all bullshit. Like bad things happen to good people all the time. So just understanding that fallacy isn't true. And then again, refocusing on, okay, let's take a break. Let's refocus. Let me think about my strategy, what I need to learn, and what can I do better for next game for myself.
Yeah, it's almost as if every troll encounter is just more exposure. You're molding, you're understanding that it can happen. And if the next time it's like, okay, you kind of tick on that template. We know how we deal with this. We know we've done it before. You know, we know we can overcome it because we did previously. And it's one of those things where I think that learning is, you know, one of those things that can definitely be the most impactful. having that exposure is crucial as well, to be able to understand what's going on and also how to deal with that in that specific scenario.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think so. Trolls are an interesting bunch and they just want to get love too. So trying to be positive, maybe sometimes it's like really highlighting the good things in a game. Maybe if you like, it's maybe it's hard for other people to see it, but you know, let's be positive. The positivity goes a long way.
For sure. Just before we start to wrap up here, we've had such an amazing episode. I loved every bit of it. It's been brilliant. I just quickly want to touch on your Twitch stream. So the Psych Sensei.
For sure,
for a couple, love it. What's your goals with, you know, your Twitch and everything? And also on the Twitch, so on your stream, basically what you do is, you know, you read some articles and then you take a break. So also known as the Pomodoro technique.
Yes.
If you can just break that down for some of the listeners and, you know, what that encounters and why it's so effective.
Yeah. Awesome. So now I'm doing my Twitch stream is kind of changing. I'm doing a couple of different things. So what I started doing Twitch was I thought it would be really cool because I'm a nerd that I could read and give some information from these academic articles that aren't always the funnest thing to read for sure. Hey, how maybe I could read them online, like read them live and make them fun and enjoyable for people. And maybe we could all learn something like from academia and my crazy thoughts. So maybe I could put my spin on it. It'd be fun. So I thought, okay, what could be a way that I could teach this and model something healthy for students because I come from student success where I could model it for students to actually like maybe study with me or they could see this and like maybe use the same technique to improve their own cognitive fatigue because I know it's tiring to study and things like that. And you need to take breaks also because you're learning and using this takes a lot of energy.
Mm-hmm.
So at USC, we use this thing called the Pomodoro technique. It's basically tomato in Italian because the guy who invented it used a tomato timer from the kitchen. So all you really need to do is, one, you set a goal. So for example, like what's that thing you want to do for the next X amount of time? Specifically, if you want to use a SMART goal, so it's a specific, measurable, attainable, realistic, and time-bound goal. Very simple. So for example, I want to read this article. I want to finish this article or read as much as I can. And so I will start my article. I will set mine for, I do mine for 20. You can do yours for 25 or 30. You don't need to flex on people how long you can keep your attention for. So I set mine for 20. And then in that 20 minutes, it's a full go on whatever you're doing. So if you got your phone, you know, you put this away. If you have like pings come up, you stop that. If you're listening to music, my suggestion would be instrumental, something that you don't sing in your own head. So that's because they'll distract you. Lo-fi's dope. types of background music that wouldn't distract you. And for that next 20 minutes or however much time that you put on, that's what you're focusing on. Then at the end of that time period, you'll hear a ding, or you can set your own timer or alarm or what have you. There's apps everywhere. I use Focus to Do. And then at the end of my 20 minutes, my Focus to Do will ding. And that's my time to take a break. So in this break, what you do, go get water, use the bathroom, stretch. I like to get up and stretch myself. So I'll actually do it on stream. I'll stretch. I'll do my arms. I like do whatever. So I just get it from my chair to make sure that I'm not just sitting for the like hours on end. And after that, well, for my Twitch, I'll do like a little break rant. And so I'll take whatever I read and like just let my mic go. And while I stretch and have a nice conversation with people on Twitch, if they want to talk with me, please come talk to me. I don't like talking to myself. It's really boring. And then after 5 minutes, the buzzer will go off and I'll do another 20 minutes of that activity. A Pomodoro full cycle is four. So four 20 minutes. So work, rest, work, rest, work, rest, work, rest. And at the fourth one, you take a longer break. So a 15 minute break. And that's one cycle. And why the Pomodoro is really nice is because, oh, I didn't mention this, but at the breaks, typically what you would do is you would record how much you were actually able to do in that 20 minutes. And why this is really, really important is because you've been there, I've been there, we're working our schoolwork or something, and by the end of the day, you're like, damn it, I did all of this studying and I feel like I did nothing. Well, if you actually write down what you did, you can actually at the end of the day, like, wow, in these four Pomodoros, I was able to read like six articles. Oh shit, that's amazing. And also why that's really important is because next time you need to read, you now know how to better allocate your time to that task. So it took me four Pomodoros to read six articles. Okay, if I have to read 12 tomorrow, I probably will need two cycles, right? So it actually quantifies your time. It helps you see what you do and incorporate some nice breaks so you don't get tired. which is really nice. And I think it relates back to esports, where you're just insecure, you just keep going, you keep playing. But this forces you to stop, forces you to reflect, and it forces you to take a break. So that's why I find it really, really effective. I use it all the time with my students. Anytime that I need have to do a workflow, I use it, because it actually helps me section out time also. So, you know, if you have problems with time or impulse control or things like that, this is a very awesome, simple intervention and technique. And you don't have to start with 20. You can start with 10. You can start with 5. Whatever you need to do to get yourself going, just do it.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you. I think the hardest thing for a lot of people is just to get up and do it. You know, whether they're procrastinating on the side or, you know, on the computer or have multiple monitors, there's so many distractions available, right? And it's one of those things where you just have to invest. You just have to say, yes, I'm doing this now, and I'm going to get into it. So it's definitely something that I recently, after watching your stream, have adopted.
Hey,
it's definitely something that I've adopted. And I think what's important as well, it started to help with memory retention as well. Absolutely. Yeah, you're starting to actively understand, okay, yeah, what was that? Oh, yeah, you know, just because you have that break, it also allows for a little bit of that reflection as well. And that, you know, reflection adds up and, you know, start to have build up that understanding of what you did basically.
Yeah, and to speak on memory and retention and things, well, one of the biggest things to remember is, like, to create memories or remember things is attention. And here's a fun thing. Here's a little fun fact for you. What you're talking about basically of switch of like going from one thing to another is like you're thinking of multitasking, right? Oh, I'm a multitasker. I can like answer emails while doing text, while watching like the League of Legends VOD, while writing my paper and listening to this music. Well, really, there's no such thing. Like, unfortunately, I hate to break it down. Instead, what you're doing is you're task switching. So what happens is, so say you start off with your paper on one screen. So you're writing your paper, you're writing your paper, then you get that text message. What you need to do in your brain is, what's happening in like nanoseconds is you're taking a full stop on this. So you are stopping, you're remembering, you're keeping that in your like visual sketch pad, your short-term memory, your working memory right here. Okay, so you have to stop it, you're holding it. Now you're switching to this task. And if it's a previous conversation, what you're doing now is recalling all the previous texts that you've had in this conversation. Now you're thinking about how to respond, then responding, then you send it, then you full stop this, you keep it in your working memory, right? So now you're holding it because you have to stop and pause. Now you go to your email, you open your email because you got that ding. You're like, oh shit, who was I talking to? What was that? Oh God. Now I'm responding to that thing, kind of picking up, recalling it, right? Responding. Now I'm going to stop, full stop. So now that's also on my sketch pad. Now I'm going to go to my next thing. So now you have the full stop, like go full stop, remembering, full stop, starting again. And all this is happening in nanoseconds. But all these, like you said, all these seconds add up. And then if you forget where you are, oh, nah, what was I talking about? This LinkedIn post? Oh, yeah, I was talking about cognitive load. Okay, now I have to restart what I was talking about. So all of these things take cognitive load and for you to switch tasks. And guess what? That's all taxing your fatigue, right? So you get tired doing this all day. So maybe if you're like doing a bunch of things all at once, you're like, whew, man, I'm tired. Why? Because you've burnt energy stopping and starting, starting on all these things. Kind of think about like if you're running and you're running one place and you're like, oh, I got to change direction, stop, run back this way. So it takes you go, stop, change directions and go somewhere else. So all that's taxing for sure. And that's why the Pomodoro technique is good, because it focuses you on one thing at a time, so you can efficiently encode all that information into long-term memory at once.
Yeah, for sure, absolutely love it. I think it's crucial to definitely have, kind of, especially when studying, a lot of people just open it up and say like, okay, in this amount of 8 hours I want to do this, but don't have that kind of set schedule or, you know, how I'm going to approach it. They just kind of go at it and trying to just go with the flow, even maybe. And I think definitely what you're saying, it's important to have that kind of set schedule, that set understanding, and something that works efficiently and effectively, which is the Pomodoro technique.
And I'm not saying that some people can't do it, and those people are really, really lucky, but I can't do it. A lot of my other students couldn't do it. It's a really common phenomenon that we're not really good at doing one thing at a time. Some people are really good at multitasking, or sorry, task switching, so they can do it all. Not everybody, myself included. So this technique is for, I'd say, normal people who need to focus on things one thing at a time and really chunk out their time. And it helps you recall information. It really helps you be rested. It really helps you see what you've done over time. Besides saying, like, oh, I've studied for 8 hours and now I know nothing, versus, okay, in this first hour, I was able to do chapter one. In the second hour, I was able to do two and three. And these are the concepts that, you know, I'm really focusing on. And that's all during that stop and reflecting piece during your break.
Yeah, for sure. Completely agree.
Simple, for sure.
Just starting to wrap up now, I'm going to put you on the spot. Sure. We've got a couple of, I know there's a couple of professional players that are listening in and tuning in. So what takeaway advice would you give to some of these players in regards to whether it be, you know, cognition or helping them develop themselves mentally or, you know, physically or personally, to take away and try and, you know, start to digest, maybe think about implementing into themselves?
Well, first, what's good, man? Hope you're doing all right. Thanks for tuning in to the show. I think for those professional players who are really like, let me understand the question. So they're really trying to improve their own mental skills or their own performance?
Yep. So they're just trying to get better, whether it be starting to adopt something, or they're just really starting to want to get involved in something and starting to, you know, try and find that mental 1% edge.
Oh, damn. All right. So I would say for all you players who are really trying to get that 1% mental edge, yo, listen, go to sleep, eat the food, get exercise, have a consistent schedule, have clear goals. Like, if you are a pro, awesome. Where do you want to go with your pro career? Where do you want it to take you? Like, besides making money or winning championships, what do you want this experience to be? Because the more specific you can get in these goals, the easier it will be to align your values or your core values. So even when you feel like tired or you feel worthless or you feel like you're not going anywhere, you have these core values to push you forward because you've committed to this journey or something deeper than yourself. But like I said, do not undervalue the fundamental things. And yes, I'm sorry. Some of these things that I'm telling you are, yes, very basic that everybody knows. But here's my question to you. It's not, do you know it? My question to you, my friend, is how often are you practicing it? Because if you know these things, but you're not actually using them, it's like useless. It's like having arrows without a bow. Like, you can't shoot them. So what's the point? So really, if you just take this basic information, have a little bit of self-discipline, really trust the process, I would say, and just experiment, you know, self-study. Was it like when you have 7 hours of sleep? Was it like when you have 8 hours of sleep? Was it like when you don't eat before practice? Was it like before you eat practice, before practice? And then from there, what other things are you willing to try? You know, yeah, sure, they sound silly. Sure, they sound simple, but have you tried it? You know, and after that, because the reason I start with the fundamentals is because if you don't have these fundamental building blocks, this Maslow's hierarchy of needs met, it doesn't matter what we build on top of it because it's going to fall over. So then after you have that eating, sleeping, exercising, resting, those things, then my question to you is like, how much are you learning? Like, are you actually learning the game versus playing the game? And there's a difference. When you go to watch your VOD, are you looking for those awesome plays or your big mistakes? Or are you learning? Are you looking for, okay, I see this, how can I replicate this awesomeness? Or damn, I really didn't like this, how could I do better? So really always focusing back upon yourself and how you can get better, either in the game or when you find yourself getting upset. What are you getting upset about? You know, having the self-awareness and really reflecting on these feelings or these things that are happening inside of you, because A, if you are able to describe these things, it makes my job a lot easier. Or when you talk to like a psychologist or coach, it makes it a lot easier because you're verbal and you can explain all these things. But at the same time, for yourself, now you have the awareness of your own triggers, and then we can start developing other techniques and strategies when you experience these triggers. But it's very difficult, like I said, to really start working and provide you with different tools if you're not aware of what's happening. So again, awareness, intentionality, goals, these are all things I think that getting out, writing on a piece of paper, having a game log or a game journal about, you know, how you're doing, how you're feeling, what you're trying to get out of this experience, all of these things is really, really important. But again, to wrap it up in three things, fundamentals, try, and yeah, just have awareness of yourself.
Fantastic. What an awesome key takeaway message. That was actually brilliant. I definitely know there are a couple of players who will benefit from that. A couple of players who have listened in previously have taken away bits and pieces in regards to nutrition, in regards to stretching in between games. And they've, you know, sent me a message back saying I'm starting to adopt this into my games, whether it be in warm up, post game. So I definitely think our chat today, there's so many things to take away. We had so many key takeaways, whether it be in regards to concentration, arousal, self-efficacy, that mental toughness we talked about, the team culture, the importance of communication, so many key things that can be extrapolated from today's chat that it was an absolute pleasure to talk with you with. So where can everyone find you on your socials to learn a little bit more and connect with you?
Yeah, well, first of all, thank you so much for having me. It's been a pleasure. I'm so glad that I got to talk with you, and hopefully players got something out of this, and I can help them even from afar on their esports journey, and know that you're not alone, and there's people like me willing and ready to help you. And I know how lonely it can be, maybe on your path where people don't understand, or, you know, maybe the boomer generation don't see the value in what you're doing, of like, oh, you're just playing a game. But I hope you know that there's people like me, like you, that are here to give you information, and I really, really want to support you in your journey. If you want to know a little bit more about me, you can visit my website, psychsensei.com. There you can find my Discord if you want to join me. I throw all my drops in there. You can find my YouTube channel where I throw all my like edited videos. You can find my Twitter for my funny thoughts. You can find my TikTok. I do TikToks for funsies. You can find everywhere. So psychsensei.com for all those things. If not, the PsychSensei at Twitch. I think it's PsychSensei on Twitter, and that's where most of my things are. Yeah.
Fantastic. Thank you very much for taking the time and time out of your day to jump on here on MindClickers. I'm sure everyone really appreciates all the expertise and all the knowledge that you've thrown at us. And I'm sure that everyone's going to take away and walk away with something definitely positive today.
Awesome. Well, thank you for having me. Please come visit me on my Twitch or find me on my website and get all my things. I would love to talk with all of you. I can't wait to have more conversations live, in person, what have you. I'm here for you guys.
Awesome. There you have it, folks. Thank you very much, Ryan, and enjoy the rest of your day.
You too, man. Thank you so much for having me. Peaces.
Yo. And there you have it. Thank you very much for tuning into what has been a absolutely jam-packed episode, left to right, back to front. You know, whatever they say, it's up and down. Really ticking through a lot of those big key things that's it's fundamental in terms of esports and trying to, you know, getting engaged with this culture in regards to team culture, in regards to emotion regulation, being a support worker for these players, mental toughness, self-efficacy, self-concentration, roster rotations, really digging deep and ripping apart some of these key topics, which I really hope Ryan explained, and he did really well. So very happy and fortunate I could chat with Ryan today. Really, really proud and happy for this episode. So thank you very much for everyone who tuned in, and I hope that some of our players listening can take away a couple of nice helpful hints, just a couple from this episode. Thank you very much. This has been your host, Lachlan, and I will see you in the next one.